Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are on this amazing planet of ours. Thank you for joining the CDO Matters podcast. I'm Malcolm. I'm going to be your host for the next 30, 40 minutes. We'll see how long we chat today. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Apurva Wadekar. She is the Senior Manager of Enterprise Data at Autodesk. And we're going to have a great talk today about kind of evolution in the space, what Apurva has seen over the last 20 years or so that she's been doing this and managing a large team of data experts focused on MDM, governance, analytics, a whole bunch of other stuff. So we're going to have a wide-ranging conversation today with somebody that is knee-deep in doing the work, which a role which I'm familiar with as well, but I'm super excited to get a fresh perspective. Apurva, welcome to CDO Matter.
Thank you for having me, Malcolm, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. Well, why don't we start, and I mentioned your lengthy tenure in the data space. Why don't we start with just a discussion of some of the major evolutions that you've seen, some of the things that you've seen change over the last few years as your role as a data leader?
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, I won't even touch AI just yet. Because you go for an afternoon nap and then there is something new, isn't it? So much is changing so ridiculously fast. But data, on the other hand, also has evolved. And I bet you have also gone through a similar transition. Remember the time when 100% of our data was on-prem? Mm-hmm. And I remember we used to take tape backups. Remember that DR was a big deal? Oh, my goodness. Then thank God for, or rather the big threes for creating cloud, right? That was a phase which was, I think that was a time when things started to get really fast, modern, and our cycle times were getting reduced on lead times. Fabulous phase, streaming analytics, and that was my way of evolution also is with all these products or services available in cloud, everything was a click of a button. So we brought in streaming analytics. I remember GDPR, what a time that was, and getting everything compliant, massively parallel processing databases. You know, so much time was saved in just partitioning and indexing schemes and designing around that. Remember how we used to go for data modeling with all knee deep into those sort of topics with Snowflakes of the world and, you know, the other MPP databases and cloud? All that went away. So much time saved. So love that. And now this year, I'll tell you, Malcolm, we are seriously looking at the lake house sort of, architecture in certain space, where we already have tons of data in S3 buckets, and we want to make it agnostic of the processing layer. And so we're doing some work in that space, mostly researching and seeing how we can leverage it. And also now databases are equipped with predictive functions inbuilt. And I'm really curious to explore that space as well. So yeah, and who knows what else will happen this year, right? Right.
Indeed. You'd mentioned tapes. And I remember having a very interesting conversation once because we had lost the tapes. And we were getting audited and we were cutting everything back to tape. Literal tape. And if you're hearing this and if you're younger and you're being like, okay. This is just a metaphor. This is a metaphor. You're using the word tape for like a metaphor for a hard drive. No, the tape.
It was tape.
Yes, like actual cassette tapes, right? Like this was our archive, right? This was our archive strategy. And I remember we were getting audited. I don't remember what the audit was, but we're like, okay, well, let's go find the tapes. And we're like, oh my God, where are the tapes? And we had them in a storage locker with a whole bunch of our decommissioned desktop equipment. And like in one of the rental places that you would use if you were like moving and you needed to store like your furniture. And we found them in a storage. We found the tapes in a storage locker after sending out somebody on a wild goose chase for several days to try to go find the tape. So yes, I remember the tapes with great. That's hilarious. So you're leading a large team, right? You are heads down every day. You are helping define roadmaps. You're helping execute. You're helping do MDM. You're helping all these things. And just leading a large team would be work enough. But with all of that that's on your plate, how do you stay up on all of the changes of the technology? What are you doing to stay fresh when it comes to all these changes?
I love that question. And I'll tell you, I love to ask that to everybody. So I would love to hear how do you deal with that as well? Here's what I will say, that in order to be technology savvy, you need to first be technology aware. And so to me, that's my number one plan, is open up as many channels as I can to get that information. All you need is a word. And then you dig, oh, what did that mean? Get into nitty-gritties of it. So I do tech news pretty diligently. I am hooked on influencers on LinkedIn, YouTube. That's how I found you, isn't it, Malcolm? I was like, this guy looks like he knows his deal. Podcasts. As many things, as many windows as you can open, right? To be exposed to that sort of newness, for a lack of a better word, is what I like to do. Second part then is, once you have information or something like that has happened, now go and deep dive into, I get into a rabbit hole of things, and I'll give you a simple example. DeepSeek came out. And they were saying, oh, this is fast, and the only $5 million to, train it. Inference is cheaper. So in coming weeks, I started to look at, oh, how are they even doing this, right? You have to be curious and ask questions. And initially, I was not getting those answers online. But now you will see there are a lot of things people are preparing and putting out there. There are articles coming out, blogs coming out on it. So I, being from data science background, I am aware of transfer learning concept, where you take one model and then its learnings are transferred to another similar model, same size. But I did not know about a concept called distilling, which is taking a bigger model and, training a smaller model.
So is that what DeepSeek did?
That's what DeepSeek did.
Okay.
Exactly. And I have to learn, obviously, more about it, go much deeper. But that was a term I just, stumbled across because I was curious. So how did they train for cheap? Another thing I recently found out is DeepSeek has 671 billion parameters. That's not a small model.
No, it's not.
Right? So how's the inference cheaper than your GPT 3.5? I think it's about the same billion parameters. So they're using the architecture where only a few parameters are sparked at it at the time based on the context. So only, let's say, 30 billion parameters are really fired up, and that's how it's saving money.
Interesting. So we said we weren't going to talk about AI, but here we are.
Here we are. We can't get rid of it.
I love that. It's be curious, explore a whole bunch of channels. Don't be afraid to go deep. That makes me think of one thing though. So you're more technical. I'm less technical. So I was in a data leadership role for many years, but I was not technical, and I always struggled. And to this day, I still struggle to a certain degree about trying to find the balance between going deep and not going deep. Because like you, I can fall way down a rabbit hole and like 3 days later, and I'm still looking up distillation, maybe, for example, yeah. Like you raised that example. And that can be a big time loss. So do you struggle with that at all? And if so, how do you find that balance between where do you go deep and where do you not go deep? Because there's only so many hours in a day.
Yes. So I'll tell you, whenever I research, there has to be an objective to your research also, right? It's not just the reading the whole everything. And the objective there is how can I bring this and make it useful to my company, right? And so that's one big objective. And second is general awareness. And if it's an awareness factor, like I won't go anywhere beyond distillation and, it's called MOE, mixed something experience. I forget the word. But I won't go any more deeper into that because, hey, what is it accomplishing, right? But I will know why it is doing it. However, if there is a somebody is talking about, I noticed you had another podcast on semantic layer. That is what I'm doing right now.
Ah,
totally go deep into it and understand what you're saying. I would do other research, all of that. So it is so purpose driven. And that's what will determine, how deep you go or not.
That is such great advice. And it's advice that has worked for me. And if you would have asked me the answer to that question, I would have given the exact same answer as you, which is have an objective in mind and go only as deep as you need to do to solve a specific task. But if you think about it, Apurvit, that's really being agile, right? Yeah. Like that's kind of an agile, maybe more lean than agile, but it's a very lean approach, which is, okay, I need to do this. And this is what I need to accomplish this task and nothing more. But in another 2 or 3 weeks, you'll probably need to come back and maybe learn a little bit more and on. And I just love that.
Who knows? Maybe in 1 year I need to learn or not, right?
Right. That's such good advice.
But if one of my data scientists tells me, distillation, I will know what the heck they're talking about. And so that's important.
It is. And that's as a non-technical person in a technical leadership role, that was my job number one, was to make sure that I could at least speak the language. Which is interestingly kind of tied to your research around semantic layers. I'd be interested to talk to you in another few months about it again and to see where you are, because that's semantic layers. When you start getting into language and ontologies and meaning and context, and there's a lot there, but we don't have to double back on that. So you lead a team and everybody needs to stay up on all these technologies. I think everybody, whether you're a leader or whether you're an individual participant, needs to stay up on these technologies. How are you kind of encouraging your team to do the same? Do you build in a certain amount of time for individual learning and development? Are you promoting your employees to go to maybe conferences or to be active on LinkedIn? How does that play out as a leader from the perspective of keeping your team, informed of these technologies?
Yes, I'll tell you, when you have a smaller team, with one-on-ones, you can accomplish some of this exchange of ideas and all. But as you start getting into layered organizations, it becomes hard because you're probably not even meeting, the core engineers that often. So what I like to do is bake it into the planning session. And every year as we, plan our roadmaps for all the different teams, I also have my direct reports create a upskilling plan for every single person on the team. And so we'll say this person is taking this particular training. I'm not too keen on having people do certifications, but it helps because, hey, now they're coming back with something for their own resume. So if people want that, I'm happy to, get some training budget on it. Conferences is a big one. Now we cannot send everybody to conferences. It gets expensive. So we do that also very methodically this person is in San Francisco, let them go to that one. So, and then, in India and Europe. So we do have, and not everybody needs to go to a conference. That's a big one. We look for something smaller. There are so many smaller summits happening locally. So we choose those sort of things. But really plan it into your, just like you're roadmapping, you roadmap your team's, upskilling plan. Another thing I'll tell you I like to do is I like to put objectives, research objectives also on the team. Now I've carved out a very small capacity and we research on topics. So we last year it was Fabric. Let's look at what Fabric has to offer and now come and produce the report that all the team members can listen to, right? We also did same with GenAI. And all I'll do is I'll tell them, hey, use these sort of tools because now that's what we have started to levitate towards. And create a POC on, let's say, our survey data. Go find out action items and now bring it in Power BI report. See if we can sort of summarize it on the fly. Now we are in business. We are giving our customer success people some good insight into those comments because those comments, nobody is looking at one comment at a time. So why don't we create that as a POC? And now, so we did that in quarter four. Now we are taking it on road shows and saying, hey, this is what we have done. Client services, are you interested? We can do this similar thing on cases, give you insights on that and so on. So you build out those research sort of POCs or prototypes we build and then see if there is an appetite for it to become mainstream.
I love that. One of my peers at Prophecy actually does a monthly book club where everybody reads the same book a month. And then once a month, they just get around and talk about that. But what you just described, like maybe you could even take it to the, like having a kind of maybe a small hackathon even or something, or where it's like, here's the problem. Hey, go on, try to find a solution to this. And then the winner gets to actually go pitch a POC to our customers. I love that. What you described was more of a kind of a month, maybe a research initiative where it's this month, hey, we're going to go and research this and then come back and present your findings to the team. I love all that. You'd mentioned, San Francisco, India. Is your team globally dispersed?
Yes.
Do you have folks all over?
Yes, in all continents except Africa.
How do you maintain cohesion with everybody? How do you keep a team vibe? Do you bring everybody to Detroit once a year, or how are you managing cohesion?
I'll tell you. So travel is a challenge. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
So we may not be able to get people to travel every year, but I like to do, at least annual. Planning, roadmap planning with the teams. So we come, we create murals and we, sort of brainstorm what went well, all analysis, right? The rose thorn buds, yeah. Everything will go into place. So I do that quite a bit. And also all hands help where, we tell them, okay, this is our quarterly, every quarter also we have to revise our roadmaps. This is what is happening quarterly. This is as a whole, we are organization, we are going towards, that also needs quite a bit of communication. People forget, what are our objectives here? These are your objectives and say that repetitively. And then we also have, monthly meetups at hubs. So at Bangalore, we'll have meetups, Singapore, California, and so on. So, we try to get that sort of community aspect with the community that's available there, and then the rest is online, thanks to the Zooms and the Teams of the world.
It's funny you mentioned Rosebud Thorn. I did that. I forget what team I was with, but that was a big part of our planning exercise. And I hadn't thought of that in years until you just said it right now. Like what category? Is this a rose? Is this a bud? Or is this a thorn to kind of help you understand?
You get so much content out of it, had happened as an opportunity. And that's how, we never thought of that. Good.
Yeah. I love all that stuff. And I just hadn't thought of that in a long time. So thanks for the memories there. So in regards to kind of team development and building out a team, How do you identify kind of the future leaders in the team? What are you doing to identify and build and develop the person who will take your job? And how important do you feel that is as a leader of a data team?
Oh, I tell you, I personally take succession planning very, very seriously. And it is, I also have my own, it's good for me too. And I'll tell you why. I want to make sure that I am not becoming a bottleneck in any which way for things to happen. Moment that happens, I'll start getting calls in the midnight, and that's not good for me or the person who's trying to get things done. So that's number one. Make yourself, try to start making yourself redundant. And so succession planning comes very handy in this. You know, to simplify the concept, what I would do, let's say I have done a particular task for, it's a brand new thing. I did it. I have done it for six months, 1 year. Now it's codified. It's all ready. Now I'll give that to one of my leaders and say, hey, why don't you handle contract management from now? Now I'm exposing them to procurement processes, finance, right? Keeping an eye on licensing, all those good things, right? And I don't have to keep doing it because, hey, you know, somebody else can learn, right? And now by keeping them, you know, pushing that out of my plate on the next person's plate, my plate is empty. Now I can take something new. So last year I went and joined AI Center of Excellence. I said, I'll be representing the data community. And let's do it. And so I got in. We had security, privacy, and a legal sort of pillars. We did not have an architecture pillar because everybody was learning, right? What are you going to say? So I said, you know what? Let's at least put our learnings together and come up with a pattern so everybody can learn from. And I had several meetings with Microsoft. And I love Microsoft. I tell you, they are so awesome. They just give everything handy, right from, hosting to monitoring. Everything is there. So love it. So anyways, you know, then now I got time to do that because I had taken time to, you know, shift down and train the next line of managers to take on the job. A couple of more things I'll tell you. The most time that goes out is not in technology. Most of my time goes in alignment, right? Influencing people. Somebody is working a little slower. So, but you know, talk to the team leader and say, hey, can we just faster? Or hey, can you get this work done for us? That's not their priority. It's my priority and the team's priority. So alignment is a big, big chunk of my life.
Right. It's amazing how much time, you know, all leaders, but I want to say this is especially data, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's all leaders, but the politics aspect, right?
Politics, and, exactly.
Yeah, politics and sales.
Exactly. So I also plan out what somebody, and this is goal setting, right? Is you have to have these sort of relationships built. I should not even, or even for our principals, right, who are like senior engineers, principal is a big role. They should be able to independently go work with enterprise architecture and other stakeholders to seal the deal and get it done, right? The architecture aspect has to be fixed. And so reduce these cycle times where we are spending so much time in going back and forth. Seal the deal, be influential. These are targets I've actually given for my principals is you need to be able to build relationships and influence with these 5-6 people, let's say, right? Very, very smart goal. Communication. This is a big one. And I'll tell you, it's always, I'm learning it too, but brevity in communicating your plan or status. If you have 20 laundry items to say, you lose people. Top three. No more than top three things you're going to say. Now you decide what those top three are. How do you categorize it? Don't give me 20 things and you're going to lose it. Lose people. Decision making is another one. What sort of decisions we want to... Okay, you are in India time. I'm in US time. You don't have to wait for me to come in office to make a decision. Delegation of decision making also is important. And you have to sort of codify it in the process. So many aspects is not just technology. It's, you know, all these different, and then business acumen is another good one is you to gain as much knowledge. And there you can just name the topics. Right. That, oh, you need to know about Qualtrics. How are we getting survey responses back or active user, whatever that might be. So
you'd mentioned a few key things you mentioned in, at the beginning and then right at the end, which is delegation for one. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see who excels and who doesn't excel when you are delegating, right? And for a lot of data leaders, that's kind of hard to do because you're giving up a portion of what could be perceived as your power, right? So, but I would invite all data leaders to take that great advice because you're going to see pretty quickly, you know, who the stars are and who needs maybe a little bit more development. And the bonus, as you rightfully pointed out, is it takes work off your plate. So win-win, right? The other key thing that I heard you say is not just delegate, but also empower, right? And I think that that's a critical part of the delegation because I've been in situations where things have been delegated to me, but I wasn't actually empowered, which could end up actually doing more harm than good because you'll go running towards a task. And then if you're not empowered to actually do the deal, as you said, if you need to go seek approval to get it done, well, then you're really, the delegation was not a real delegation. You're still controlling that power. So I
cross the wall.
Yeah. So such great advice there. So, well, when looking back, I mean, you're talking about some of the things you're working on. We'll talk a little bit about where we're going. You'd mentioned Microsoft. Maybe we'll talk about some of those things in a bit, but just looking back over the last year, what are some of the things that you're really proud of? What are some of the bigger lifts that you've made as a team? What would you love to share?
Yeah, I tell you, Autodesk is it's a very, very tech savvy company. Everybody is capable of doing their own data work. And a couple of years ago, you know, we had built silos and there were no one source of truth that we could rely upon. And so we have been working on creating this foundational supermarket of data sets. And we are, last year was year two. Now it's going to be year three, but then again, keep building on those products. So we have all these sources of truth. So yeah, that was something we did. And you know, as we started, we took inspiration from data mesh and medallion architecture, you name it. We made it our own. And all that is now hosted in Salesforce, Snowflake. Mm. And yeah, we have a nice governance program around it, which I started around the same time when we got, you know, this whole idea running. We needed a lot of governance, a lot of quality checks. But now really, you know, as the adoption is now starting, we are seeing the rubber meet the road. And now fun times.
Where is that adoption happening through? Is that happening through dashboards you're providing? Is it happening through, like, people are accessing through a data catalog? Where are you actually seeing the adoption? Where's the rubber kind of hitting the road?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, we have several personas who are leveraging this. One persona is other teams who are reliant upon these base data. Other smart development teams, right? Who are core technical teams. They are now moving from their whatever old tables they were looking at to now new tables, right? That we are providing our tomatoes and potatoes layer. They are using our ingredients now, which are fresh and high quality and so on. Then there is a second layer of people who are in reports, right? Now they have to also start looking at the data sourced from our products. And those changes are happening because now they are looking at the analytics sort of schemas, which again, somebody else owns, but now start looking at these tables instead of those. And then finally, there is analyst layer who really they don't care where the data is coming from as long as they have the buffet of objects to choose from. And that's the last piece I'm working on now. Is how do we make this available to our, you know, our analyst community without them having to know, join this and join that and use that table and all that? How can we make it easier and in a very marketplace sort of fashion that all they do is pull objects in a report, Power BI report in our case, and they just do the visuals instead of creating models, semantic model in the backend.
Interesting. Do you have, so you're a centralized data team. Yes. Sounds like you are. Do you have data and analytics functions in each of your business units? And do they have a certain degree of authority? And if they do, how do you sync between the two?
Yes, yes, and yes. So here's how we have sort of segregated the duties, right? Any ingestion of data will be done by the teams that we have, enterprise data hub teams. So nobody other than this team is going to go to Salesforce or SAP to get the data.
Okay.
Right? So we'll do all that ingestion and we'll give you the, now, for example, orders table, orders. We have 5-6 different channels, let's say, from where orders are being placed. We want to combine all that data. Now, this is a solid orders table, good for the entire organization. Now you use it. Now the analytics community can use it the way they want. And you don't want to tighten everything, you know. You want a little bit of liberties to do their own sort of development and do their own thing. So that's, go ahead, do that, right? But ingestion piece and making those products available will be solely this team.
Okay. So you are acting in essence as kind of a central broker or provider of all the data, but you are doing the governance, you are doing the quality, you're doing the ETL, you're creating the marketplaces, but where the decentralized or more federated, probably more appropriate data teams are the ones that are building the dashboards, that are doing Power BI, that are maybe even doing the data science. That's a good question. Where does the data science sit? But in both places?
In both places, yes. We, again, data science is, you okay there?
Yeah, I'm good. pardon me, I'm good. Thanks for checking. I got some water.
So data science, again, can sit wherever it wants. It sits in application layer. It sits on the data side. Again, you know, data science and analytics is something we have said, okay, yes, let's democratize it. Let people have, you know, their own power autonomy to do it, because it's so close to the business, right? The stakeholder wants to see the report in exactly this way. You know, the central team cannot... We don't care. Do it.
Okay. So from a data science perspective, you mentioned, you know, Lakehouse, you mentioned, you know, Snowflake. Are you worried about data scientists doing duplicate work when it comes to things like quality, MDM, maybe even governance, where they are just access? Are they going to be access? You said you can't access raw tables. You're going to be the only ones.
They are fresh potatoes and tomatoes. Use it for your recipe. And that recipe could be, seriously, that's how I like to tell it. Recipe could be your analytics recipe, or it could be your data science ML model, right? Just use it.
But the classic data management tasks, like quality, for example, like let's just say that you're doing some sort of quality tasks or even basic ETL, that's happening in the centralized group before data scientists are touching the, okay.
Yes.
You're nodding. Okay.
Definitely. Right. And what we are trying to do here is the technical metrics. And as per our governance program, we have established technical metrics mandated for everybody who's producing data. If data set is in production, it has to go through all the mandated technical sort of tests. And then business metrics is another layer we are trying, you know, we are getting in the practice, is define those, because businesses are going to say, oh, look for the nulls, or look for if the, you know, state is, you know, Michigan, MI, and, you know, different flavors of it. It has to be, businesses are going to ask you that. Business might say, oh, you know what, all the survey data that's coming in the table, I want to connect it back to some sort of a customer. And give me at least 98% of connectivity between those. Now that's a business metric. So if now it falls down to 90%, now the team has to look what's going on and then let the business know, oh, you know what, something has happened, or people are not putting their name, whatever it might be.
Yeah. So those data scientists aren't going straight to source. They're coming to you. Okay. Love it.
Yes.
That's I'm seeing that more and more. Just presented a use case a couple of days ago at Gartner with Raju from Lexmark, where they're using Databricks, but they're using the exact same thing. And a lot of our larger customers, it's the exact same situation where previously the data scientists were going to the source and were doing all of their own DQ, all of their own transformations, all of their own governance, even applying like their own definitions to anything, however they needed to. And so many companies are trying to get away from that and put some controls around what happens in the data science world. So that's okay. That's interesting. Let's save the AI goodies for last, or maybe we can't. I don't know. But since we just talked about last year, what are some of the things that are top of mind for this year's roadmap? Where are you focused for this year?
This year, I want to really start leveraging some of these Gen AI, prototypes we had built. I want to build on top of it and start offering it to our business partners on the data we already have. Because we specialize in customer success, my team is solely customer success and client services space. And so I want to bring some of these capabilities in our space. So that I'm really excited about that. We are obviously going to keep building our foundational layer with data products. We have tons, that's our main bread and butter. Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about the taking the next step with Gen AI, what does that look like to you? Are we talking about kind of trying to do some of your own fine tuning on an open source model? Or you'd mentioned Microsoft before. Are you thinking about maybe more complex RAG patterns on top of an open AI? What do you know what flavor it's going to take this year and how you're going to approach it?
Now, let me tell you, I'm on the enterprise side. I'm not on the product side. Now, if you ask somebody on the product side what they're doing, they're going to tell you a different answer.
The customer-facing stuff, you mean?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Our products. I call it as products.
Yeah.
There's a whole different flavor.
Yeah.
My customers are my Autodesk employees, right?
Yeah.
Finance, marketing, the sales, and so on. So the way we are trying to use AI or Gen AI in our space is to cater to them. So now I gave you an example of survey responses. There's tons of survey response comments that are coming in. We want to highlight what action items are there, categorize them and say, oh, these are the flavors of comments we are getting. These are the themes. And here's the action item that you can follow. Now, I want to say, okay, let's go to, and now all this will happen on the data side, right? We'll actually go in database. On the reporting side, now because of the Copilot, there are some features in Copilot, the visuals that you can pull in Power BI and say, okay, North America, this particular segment of customers, show me how are they feeling and what are the action items I need to. It's going to summarize it on the fly, the actions, the comments. And so now if I'm the customer success manager for that region, I now know this is the sentiment and I should go and now take this forward and say, oh, people are having trouble downloading our tool, our product. See what's going on here, right? And they can curate that message to that team, email them or set up a meeting. It becomes very easy, right? Because you're highlighting all these points. So that's the intent, is find, sort of prescribing the, what to do next. That is the intent.
So I suspect, forgive me if I'm going a little too deep here, but so you've got a bunch of customer feedback probably sitting in long text strings, I assume, in a CRM or multiple CRMs. You're going to deploy a custom Copilot, perhaps on top of Power BI, maybe not, doesn't matter. But you're going to build a custom Copilot. Are you using, been playing with, is it OpenAI Studio or some other tool for building the Copilot? Have you played with any yet?
We have. So we have brought all the data into Snowflake, first of all. So it's sitting in the database. Second layer would be running action item creation for each comment. right? And that will happen leveraging Microsoft's OpenAI.
Okay.
Simple LLM. There is no nothing. Yeah. It's so simple, right? Categorize it and continue creating that content in the database. Okay. Step two will be on top of that Power BI, which is equipped with Copilot visuals, which can on the fly summarize things for us. That's the ecosystem.
When I've played with this, OpenAI Studio, build a Copilot, it was so simple. I was blown away by how simple it was. I able to pick a source to ground the behavior of the model, and the source could have been is just like some text blob somewhere, right? And where that is being used to help ground the behavior, that could be all the data around all of those customer interactions that you're talking about. So the lesson here to anybody who's listening is, if you've been kind of dragging your feet on AI or dragging your feet on Gen AI, there are tools out there to be up and running. Now, this is an internally facing, use case. So, I suspect you are managing expectations appropriately internally and saying, hey, we're this is a POC and we're learning as we go. You're laughing. So it sounds like this is by design, this internal focus first and to see how things work. Yeah.
Absolutely. And okay. And that's where, that's what my job profile is make sure we have all the data and insights and prescribed, knowledge that we can impart to these people so they can go and do their jobs well. So
are you concerned at all about the, for lack of a better word, quality of that data? And if yes, are you thinking, in the coming year about how to overlay a data quality process on top of that? Because this, I was just at the Gartner conference and everybody's talking about AI. Yeah. And in the keynote speech, like this is where there's like 5,000 people in the room and everybody's looking at a giant screen. This is one stat that came up and said data quality is perceived as the number one inhibitor of companies in their adoption of Gen AI. And the use case that you just described, fairly simple, I would think, but I would still wonder, okay, assuming that somebody's typing something into a CRM that is describing a customer experience or describing their experience, I suspect there still could be concerns related to data quality there. Are you thinking about that?
Absolutely. And this is what, these are the type of monitoring metrics I brainstormed on with Microsoft the entirety of last year. Mm. Is once the model is in production, how do you know it's doing its job, right? And so a couple of things. One is thumbs up, thumbs down. That's an absolute mandate, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Because you want to hear, otherwise you're reading literally everything. And what if becomes millions of comments coming, then what are you going to do, right? It's impossible to scale that way. So do that. Second is, and now this was very specific to RAG, is groundedness. How much to calculate hallucination, right? Is the summary that the LLM is providing, does it have a backing of the source? And so what happens in a RAG model is it will, let's say I'm asking, what's the policy for, vacation? It will go and check where the vacation policy are. It will get that extract out of the vector database and then use it to summarize it. Now, what I do is I compare this and this to see how they're matching or not. If they're not matching, this guy's hallucinated because this is my data, right? And so that's a metric that is given out of the box by Microsoft. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is call an API and say, what's my groundedness score, 0 or 1. So easy.
Well, that's interesting. But the only way they could be doing, speaking of rabbit holes, the only way they could be doing that is by using AI to assess.
AI as a judge. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Okay. I need to think some more because that seems okay, interesting. All right.
We are now getting into agentic AI. Is one AI is determining the output of another AI. LLM is determining the output of another LLM, and now they are working together. That's another thing on my list, by the way, is come up with some use cases for agentic AI that we can use in data space.
There's such a paradox there, Purva, because I would argue that at scale, right? Like another stat that Gartner shared was that 80 to 90% of all corporate data, all data is unstructured, right? It's sitting out there. It's in SharePoint servers and PDFs and video files, and who knows, it's all unstructured or arguably semi-structured, you know, maybe HTML, XML, but it's all out there and it's mostly ungoverned, right? Like nobody's checking to see if the Word document that is put on the SharePoint site that talks about, you know, maybe customer frequently asked questions or who knows, but nobody's really checking from a data quality perspective, is that stuff accurate? And I think that at scale, the only way you're going to be able to do that is to use AI, right? It's for you said for AI to be the judge. And it's interesting, you would want to assess the quality to make sure that that data is good for AI, but the only way to do that is to use AI. I don't know. Makes my head explode.
But I'll tell you one thing. People say that, and that's the truth, that a lot of unstructured data is there more so than structured, but most of the usable data is structured, right? What do people want to know? Well, how is my company doing? How many orders are being picked? All that is structured.
Yeah.
And so people are happy and getting their, you know, sort of inputs to make those decisions they are making. A wiki page is not really going to help me that much, no matter how wonderfully quality, you know, wonderful quality aspects I get to it. And that's why it's ignored.
Right.
Right. So that's just my two cents is, you know, you have to really find the reason why somebody should care. And then once you find it, then you find what's going
to be. It comes back to a business case.
Back to business.
Right? Always comes back to a business case. I think that is a great way to end. Apurva, thank you so much for spending an hour with us today on a Friday afternoon. I really appreciate it. This is some fantastic advice and fantastic insights. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Malcolm. And it's always so wonderful speaking with you.
All right. Well, to all of our listeners, please don't forget to subscribe and to click the speaking of thumbs up, thumbs down. Hey, this matters. The robots need to know. Thumbs up, thumbs down. If you could do that, we would appreciate it. We do this every 2 weeks where we are sharing insights from data leaders around the world about what you need to know to become a better data leader, a better CDO, and to build great teams. So thanks, Apurva. Again, we will see you on another episode of the CDO Matters podcast sometime very soon. Thanks all, and bye for now.